Hello, this is Derek Frost from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, Made in the Triangle. Four industry sectors claim surprisingly large manufacturing victories with Triangle-made products. And that's the headline on the front page. The actual cover story is inside the Triangle Business Journal with another headline. Who says local manufacturing is dead? Triangle-manufactured products extend around the globe. And this article is written by Cameron Snipes. Less than four decades ago, the Triangle area manufacturing industry was heavily dependent on textiles and tobacco. Today, the area produces a wide range of products, from electric vehicles to wine corks, and the diversity of products continues to expand. Local manufacturing may have undergone a transformation, but it is far from dead. According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, in October 2014, the most recent numbers available, there were roughly 448,800 people employed in manufacturing jobs in North Carolina. That's slightly more than half what it was 20 years ago, but up from its two-decade low of 433,200 in October 2010. In the Triangle, those patterns paint a slightly different picture. In October 2014, BLS numbers show that in the Raleigh-Cary MSA, Metropolitan Statistical Area, and the Durham-Chapel Hill MSA, combined, there were about 59,700 people employed in manufacturing jobs. That's near its lowest level in 20 years. But according to the Industrial Extension Service, or IES, at NC State University, the larger 13-county Triangle area employs a total of 78,092 employees in 1,683 manufacturing establishments. And the contribution to the state's GDP from manufacturing in the Triangle's two main MSAs in 2013 was $24 billion, IES numbers show. While those historical numbers may be skewed a bit considering the impact of the Great Recession, the statistics do reflect a change to the overall makeup of the Triangle's economy and of the business of manufacturing. According to Mitch Poteet, a Triangle regional manager at the IES at NC State, manufacturing uses a lot more technology today. The new workforce needs technology training now to keep up, he says. That training is paying off and showing up inside the walls of widget-making entities. I'm seeing in the more modern manufacturing companies that frontline-level employees are getting more of a voice, Poteet says. The manufacturing industry in the state, as well as the Triangle, is reinventing itself to stay relevant. A big boost came earlier this year when President Barack Obama announced the establishment of the Manufacturing Innovation Institute at NC State and established companies in the industry, the so-called traditional plants, such as component manufacturers, are evolving as well by partnering more with domestic suppliers to boost business. As for making changes, we're still doing a lot of it, and we're starting to see more and more companies bring manufacturing back to the U.S. Companies are indeed still making things in the Triangle. When compiling the information for the graphic that highlights the companies that make products here locally, Triangle Business Journal wanted to give readers a hearty sampling. This is not meant to be an exhaustive list, partly because none such exists. TBJ divided the local manufacturing scene into four sectors: the traditionals, the tasty, the style makers, and the dreamers. Of course, the Triangle includes many manufacturers that aren't illustrated here, such as component makers Cree, Tipper Tie, and Godwin Manufacturing, and many others that make a significant contribution to the Triangle economy. These include the many breweries and host of other food and drink makers that dot the area, as well as jewelry makers, game developers, textile companies, and paper product manufacturers. Peruse the accompanying graphic to learn a bit more about what's being made in this area. And first, we start with the traditionals, equipment and machinery. Armacell, company description, manufacturer of flexible insulation foams for the equipment insulation market, engineered foams. Number of employees, approximately 2,200. Product samples, equipment for commercial and residential construction, products used in wind turbine equipment, the automotive industry and sports and leisure, such as flotation devices, wrestling mats, and helmet padding. Where products are used sold globally through the company. Where products are manufactured and made. Various manufacturing locations, including Mebane, its America's headquarters. Captive Air, manufacturer of commercial-grade kitchen ventilation systems, 890 employees. Product samples, commercial kitchen ventilation, exhaust fans, heaters. Where products are used, sold, military kitchens, hospitals, nursing homes, retirement homes, corporate kitchens, school food service. Where products are manufactured, made. 6 U.S. plants, including one in Youngsville. Number of units sold, 35,000 commercial kitchen units sold thus far in 2014. Total sales, $325 million. Future target market, constantly entering new markets and developing new technologies. The Holland grill manufacturer, offers several sizes and styles of grills, including the Apex, the Liberty, the Epic, the Companion, and the Pinnacle models, and makes grill accessories. Products are sold through dealers in more than 20 U.S. states and in Canada. Products are manufactured and made in Holly Springs. And did you know, representatives of the Holland Grill Company do live demonstrations of its grills across the U.S. throughout the year. They're billed as cookouts and taste tests are encouraged. And as this is a long list, we'll just mention a few from each section. Next, the Tasty Food and Drink. House Autry Mills. Company description, cooking products, breaders, mixes, etc. for use in cooking. Product samples, cornmeal, seasoned breaders and coatings for chicken, seafood, pork, etc. Hush Puppy, biscuit and cornbread mixes, sauces. Where products are used and sold. Available in more than 8,000 grocery locations in 37 states. Products are manufactured in Four Oaks. And did you know, in 2012, the company celebrated its 200th anniversary. Luna Pops. Company description, frozen popsicles. Number of employees, 6 from October through February. 12 to 15 from February through September. Product samples, frozen popsicles in a variety of flavors. Products are used and sold in various retail stores along East Coast and California. Products are manufactured and made at the Piedmont Food and Agricultural Processing Center in Hillsboro. Number of total units sold 915,456 year-to-date through December 2nd, either as individual bars or in four packs. Product first introduced in 2012. And Ford's Foods Incorporated, maker of barbecue, grilling and marinating sauces, product samples, bone suckin' sauce, bone suckin' mustard, bone suckin' salsa, and bone suckin' yaki. Products are sold and used online and at various retailers. Products are manufactured in Raleigh. And did you know Ford's Foods founder Phil Ford, not the UNC Chapel Hill basketball star, created bone suckin' sauce while trying to copy his mother's recipe for a Western North Carolina-style barbecue sauce. In the Dreamers section, Oddball Inventions, there's Nomaco, spelled N-O-M-A-C-O. Company description, manufacturer of various foam products. Product samples, plumbing insulation, playground padding, protective packaging, aquatic leisure, swim noodles, etc. Where products are sold, are used, sold directly from the company and in various retailers. Products are manufactured in Zebulon. Products were first introduced in 1979, and did you know? Nomaco founder Mark Noel first established the company in Connecticut to manufacture pipe insulation. Organic Transit. Manufacturer of alternative transportation, number of employees, 20. Product samples, variety of ELF, short for Electric Light and Fun, vehicles. Products are used and sold in its showroom online through its website, as well as 6 performance bicycle stores across the country and a few independent dealers in Wisconsin, Florida, and Texas. Products are manufactured in Durham. And did you know the Elf car has attracted interest from a few celebrities, including comedian Jerry Seinfeld, and Google's Silicon Valley campus has 3 of the vehicles. And in the style maker section, textiles and personal products, Burt's Bees, personal care products manufacturer, 420 total employees. Products include facial and body skin care, lip care, baby care and men's grooming products, outdoor remedies, furniture polish, etc. Products are used and sold in retailers worldwide and online. Products are manufactured or made in Durham and other locations. Did you know Burt's Bees co-founders Roxanne Quimby and Bert Shavitz met in the summer of 1984 in Maine while Quimby was thumbing a ride home? And Holly Aiken, specialty handbags company. Product samples, vinyl handbags, backpacks, diaper bags, messenger bags, clutches, wallets, and accessories. Products are used and sold in company stores in Raleigh and Wrightsville Beach, as well as specialty North Carolina retailers including Cameron's, Deco, Iago, and Main & Taylor. Specialty retailers in 5 other states, California, Iowa, Maryland, Michigan, and Missouri. Products are made in Raleigh, and the product was first introduced to the market in 2004. And in a short by-the-number section that accompanies the article, 78,092, the number of employees in manufacturing jobs in the Triangle area, 1,683, the number of manufacturing establishments in the Triangle, $24 billion, the contribution to North Carolina's overall GDP from manufacturing in the Raleigh-Cary MSA and the Durham-Chapel Hill MSA combined. And also with this article, there's a short section on things you thought were made here, but are not. Thunder Shirt. Durham-based company makes compression clothing for dogs and cats, as well as various other products to reduce pet anxiety. Its products are made in the U.S. and China, but nothing is manufactured in the Triangle area. M-Plus. Durham's M-Plus Corporation is in the business of manufacturing of more than a dozen brands in the $1 billion footwear and recreational accessory markets. Consumer brands include AirPlus, Apera, Grangers, High Gear, Ice Trekkers, Little Hotties, Soft Comfort, Soft Soul, and Yak Tracks. Soft Comfort and Soft Comfort Elite are manufactured in the U.S. The rest are made in China. And Peter Millar. Peter Millar manufactures a line of clothing and accessories. The company has a studio and design center in Raleigh and a business operations center in Raleigh, but none of its products are made in the Triangle area. They are manufactured in different places, including Brazil and Italy. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by managing editor Rebecca Troyer. The main headline, Caddy Insights Yield Leadership Expertise. Remember the iconic photo of Payne Stewart's caddy jumping on the legendary golfer soon after he made the putt to win the 1999 U.S. Open in Pinehurst? If you're a golfer, you know what Biz is talking about. Well, Stewart's caddy was Mike Hicks, a Mebane resident. Hicks, along with his friend Grant Barry, who has caddied for Heinrich Stenson, Thomas Bjorn, and Raleigh resident Carl Peterson, have started an entertainment and motivational speaking project called Caddies on Course. With an assist from Sally Webb Barry, who owns the special event company, COC will leverage Webb Barry's wide network of events business to generate opportunities, founders say. I think we will bring incredible insight to what a golfer goes through, Barry says, explaining much of the leadership patterns dealing with organizing thought process, stress management, and positive attitudes are the same as a corporate executive. Hicks says caddies give the perception of having inside knowledge on players, and that by definition makes them interesting. Barry and Hicks add that they have recruited a few other PGA Tour caddies to assist them with events across the country. And the most caffeinated city in the U.S. is? Durham just topped another list, and this one might keep you awake. Durham edged out the likes of Seattle to be named the most caffeinated city in the U.S. The data is from alarm clock app company Sleep Cycle, in case you were curious. Durhamites average 7 hours, 9 minutes in bed each night, 1 minute more than the national average. Durham's average bedtime is 12:04 a.m., 11 minutes later than the national average. And the average wake-up time is 7:28 a.m., 5 minutes later than the national average. The five most caffeinated cities, according to Sleep Cycle: Durham, Portland, Baltimore, Seattle, and Philadelphia. Highwoods execs take home cash for stock options. Highwoods Properties President and CEO Ed Frisch cashed in on more than 63,300 shares of his stock options over a two-day period in early December for a gain of about $1.6 million. Shares of Raleigh-based Highwoods Properties have been trading high in recent weeks, hitting a company high of $44 per share, compared to trades of less than $35 per share a year ago. Two other Highwoods executives have also recently sold shares. Ted Flink, Vice President and Chief Investment Officer, sold 7,437 shares for $248,048 at $43.13 per share. The same day, Jeffrey Miller, Vice President and General Counsel, sold 1,000 shares for $43,277 at $43.28 per share. Fat chicken game plucks away at factory farms. About a year after Relevant Games, a joint venture of EW Scripps and Capital Broadcasting Company, launched, its studio director, Insomniac Games veteran Josh Mills, is putting a satirical take on factory farming in the hands of game players. He's not your typical animal rights activist. He's a meat eater who loves to hunt, but he doesn't like inhumane treatment of animals at factory farms. So he and his Durham-based team created a satire game, Fat Chicken. Fat Chicken is really just about factory farming, Mills says. We wanted to tackle that topic in a way that could draw people in who would normally never think about factory farming and what goes on there. The satire game features currency called Murder Bucks and pesky protesters that, if you're not careful, will shut down your whole operation. And in the You Said It section, surprise, you've been caught texting and driving by a trooper tag team. Readers online and Facebook comments to the story, North Carolina troopers have a surprising new way to catch you texting and driving, which describes a new system for ticketing those who text and drive using two different vehicles. $288? Those fines and court costs should be double. Dave Manella, Carey. LOL, people have no problem with people walking around without health insurance, but want to tell us what we can do in our own vehicles. Mac Cyril, Oxford. One of these potentially endangers others, the other doesn't, in response to above comment. Troy Doyle, Raleigh. Good, distracted drivers kill. Crystal Elaine, Raleigh. And they can distinguish between me texting and me changing songs? How? Michael Teal, Raleigh. And now we turn to the reporter pages in the Triangle Business Journal, and we begin with the page of Amanda Hoyle, who covers commercial and residential real estate. The main headline, Glenwood Place, another North Hills in the making. An ambitious new mixed-use development plan has emerged for the aging Glenwood Place office park at the I-440 Beltline near Crabtree Valley Mall in Raleigh. Glenwood Place owner Gordon Grubb has formed a new 50-50 partnership with the Lincoln Harris real estate development firm of Charlotte to build what could be a more than $500 million real estate redevelopment plan for the nearly 40-acre site at the corner of Glenwood Avenue and Women's Club Drive. Lincoln Harris and Grubb's real estate company, Grubb Ventures, are planning to submit a rezoning request with the city before December 31 that would allow for demolition of the 8 small office buildings in the park and build in their place a mix of buildings and structured parking that could include 70,000 to 140,000 square feet of retail and restaurants, 600,000 to 800,000 square feet of new offices, in addition to the 113,000 square foot 3700 Glenwood office building Grubb built in 2006, a full-service hotel, and hundreds of new luxury apartment or condominium units. Grubb Ventures already has approval to build a 292-unit apartment building adjacent to the Women's Club of Raleigh at Glenwood Place. We want to take this 40-acre vintage 70s-style suburban office park and turn it into an exciting, vibrant, mixed-use community, Grubb says. The buildings here have really outlived their useful life, and they really are getting expensive to maintain. The Glenwood Place office park currently rents space to about 115 local companies, ranging from corporate offices for Frankel Staffing Partners to nonprofit organizations like the Alzheimer's Association, Eastern North Carolina. Most, if not all, of those businesses will, over the next few months and a few years, have to start thinking about a new long-term location plan if Grubb Ventures and Lincoln Harris can get approvals from the city. The project would also need about $2 million in road improvements at Glenwood Avenue to accommodate the expected increase in traffic. The two largest office buildings, which would be visible from the I-440 Beltline, would have a maximum height limit of 195 feet, or between 10 and 12 stories tall. The proposed hotel building, which could also include condos on top, would also be restricted to the 195-foot height limit. Top Golf Mega Entertainment Complex eyeing Cary Town Center. Top Golf, a technology-driven driving range and entertainment company, is in talks with the owner of Cary Town Center Mall to replace the soon-to-be-vacated Sears department store with a new three-story entertainment complex. Top Golf, a Dallas, Texas-based company, has built 10 of its 65,000-square-foot entertainment complexes in major cities across the country, including Atlanta, Houston, and Chicago. It plans to open 13 more locations in 2015. In Cary, sources say the Sears department store would be demolished to make way for the new Top Golf building. Most facilities feature more than 100 indoor hitting bays with a 215-yard driving range. It targets golfers and non-golfers by also offering live music, game tables, video game consoles, and by serving food and alcohol. The company, however, has not yet submitted any applications for permits or site plan approval with Cary. Citrix Building changes hands through LLC. The developers of the recently completed Citrix office and parking complex in downtown Raleigh have already found a high-dollar buyer for the high-profile property. New York City real estate investor group JMC Holdings closed on a deal December 4 to buy the 170,000-square-foot office complex at 120 Southwest Street, but terms of the deal were not disclosed. Real estate sources say the buildings were valued at more than $60 million. JMC Holdings is a small New York City-based real estate company founded by Matthew Kassin, a Tishman Spire veteran, in 2011. JMC Holdings' portfolio of properties includes 5 office and multi-family buildings in the New York City and Washington, D.C. areas. The seller was a joint venture partnership between the Crown Companies of Dobson and Cherokee of Raleigh. Original Carolina Ale House to close, relocate to Glenwood South. The Original Carolina Ale House restaurant, located on Creekside Drive off of Wake Forest Road in Raleigh, will be closing at the end of December as the restaurant's ownership group prepares for the opening of its new flagship location in downtown Raleigh in January. We all have emotional ties to the original, but we know the new downtown location and the Falls of Noose location will happily accommodate those guests who have been loyal to Creekside for the past 15 years, owner Lou Mashako said. An official opening date for the new location at 500 Glenwood Avenue has not been announced. Peakway Market Square in Apex sold. The Peakway Market Square Shopping Center in Apex has been sold to local investor Focus Property Group for a reported $7.4 million. Peakway Market Square is a two-story, 50,692-square-foot retail and office center at 812 West William Street in Apex. Its tenant base includes a Rodino's sports bar and pizza restaurant, Apex Beverage Company, Triangle Eye Institute, and Sweet Memories Bakery. Smash Burger, opening December 17. The Triangle Region's second Smash Burger restaurant location will be opening on December 17 at the Shops at Falls Village Shopping Center on Falls of Noose Road in North Raleigh. Smash Burger's first location in Durham opened in March. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the reporter page for Jason DeBrun, who covers healthcare and biopharmaceuticals. And the story on his page is headlined, What GSK's 900 Layoffs Mean for the Triangle and RTP? Other pharma firms could absorb some staff. A week after drug giant GlaxoSmithKline announced a reduction of as many as 900 positions from its research and development hub in Research Triangle Park, the Triangle's pharmaceutical scene began to digest the news and look ahead to what happens next. Already, some companies in pharmaceutical and related fields confirmed that affected GSK employees might find jobs in their companies. Biogen IDEC, for example, has 13 positions open now and will have new jobs posted throughout 2015. Its recruitment manager plans to reach out to GSK outplacement coordinators to make sure they understand what opportunities might be available. In addition, GSK officials stressed that as many as 450 workers will potentially transfer to a subunit at Parexel, a pharmaceutical research organization with offices in Durham. Still, the layoffs affect the Triangle in a figurative sense as much as a literal one, in that GSK and its predecessors are in many ways the godfather of the local pharmaceutical industry. Glaxo, a GSK predecessor, agreed to locate some 700 jobs in Durham's American Tobacco when that campus was just getting off the ground, giving that project a shot in the arm that helped it grow into the successful business center it is today. In the coming weeks, affected GSK employees will work with state and local employment agencies as they look for new jobs. Whenever a company in North Carolina announces large layoffs, a division of the North Carolina Commerce Department called NC Works springs into action. State workers create a rapid response team, which works with the company, as well as affected workers, in an attempt to find them employment elsewhere. Workers facing layoffs will fill out a survey to give NC Works a feel for the demographics of the affected worker population. In some situations, workers might need resume building or interview advice. As many of the affected GSK employees have advanced degrees, that likely isn't necessary, so NC Works will serve more as a conduit to connect the workers with the best open positions. We share a common goal with the company, says Kim Gennardo, a commerce spokeswoman. These people are highly educated and we want them to find work here locally. And along with this article, we have a GSK timeline. 1983, Glaxo Incorporated establishes U.S. headquarters in RTP. In Zebulon, it sets up a manufacturing arm. 1990, Bob Ingram joins Glaxo Incorporated. 1997, Ingram and Jim Goodman meet several times. Ingram agrees to Glaxo becoming the anchor tenant in the American Tobacco campus. 2000, merger of Glaxo Wellcome and SmithKline Beecham is announced, thus creating GlaxoSmithKline. Mid-2000s, Advair becomes the highest selling drug for GSK, eclipsing $10 billion in sales. Many doses are produced in Zebulon. July 2012, GSK announced a $3 billion settlement, pleaded guilty to misdemeanor violations of the U.S. Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act. April 2014, GSK reaches deal with Novartis. Transaction could eclipse $25 billion. GSK sold oncology business to Novartis and bought the vaccine unit. And also in some numbers below that in a graphic, 350, GSK positions affected in the first quarter of 2015. 450, GSK positions affected in the second quarter of 2015. And 100, GSK positions affected in the second half of 2015. And according to a TBJ poll, the question was, will the Triangle's pharma reputation take a hit in the wake of GlaxoSmithKline's RTP layoffs? There were 398 responses. 63% say yes. 37% say no. And finally, in a He Said It section, first a quote from Doug Edgerton, president and CEO of the North Carolina Biotechnology Center. We are disappointed to hear GSK's announcement that we know it reflects the realities that global pharmaceutical companies are facing. GSK's ancestor, Burroughs Wellcome, was an early recruit to North Carolina and has served as a cornerstone in the region's rapid life science growth. And from a GSK statement to the North Carolina Department of Commerce, please note that these numbers are likely an overstatement of the actual numbers, since some of the impacted employees will be provided with an opportunity to relocate and take positions in other GSK locations. In addition, as many as 450 of these employees will be offered positions with a Research Triangle-based GSK supplier. And as a note, GSK signed a letter of intent with pharmaceutical research organization Parexel, in which Parexel will take over as many as 450 GSK workers and establish a sort of GSK subunit within Parexel. Additionally, GSK will offer some employees positions in Philadelphia. And now we turn to the page for Lauren Onosorge. She covers technology and entrepreneurship. The main headline: Citrix Accelerator's running start. It was April at the Contemporary Art Museum in Raleigh when John McIntyre, managing director of Citrix's Startup Accelerator, first let it slip. The Silicon Valley-based initiative would expand to the Triangle. In June, Citrix partnered with the City of Raleigh and HQ Raleigh to make it official. And in September, alongside partner Red Hat, initiative execs announced the seven teams for Raleigh's inaugural class, including two internal Citrix startups. There were 64 applicants, says Jason Wyden, executive director at HQ Raleigh. It's become a perfect example of a corporate partnership. Over the past few weeks, companies have opened their minds and books to a team of entrepreneurial experts, and those experts, including Red Hat Chief People Officer Delisa Alexander, are already touting the program's success. So it seems only appropriate that on December 8 at CAM Raleigh, the partners would gather again, this time for the final pitch day. It's full circle, McIntyre says. I was standing right here in April, and here we are concluding the program. While investors peppered the crowd, think angels Alex Osadzinski and David Gardner, to name a few, the event wasn't a typical entrepreneurial showcase. It wasn't solely about metrics, handshakes, and pitch narratives. It's sharing what this is all about, Wyden says. To him, this is about bringing different entities together to foster an entrepreneurship community in downtown Raleigh. And it's continuing. The City of Raleigh has agreed to subsidize office space should companies from the program decide to stay here. Alexander is among those hoping they'll stay. She says a vibrant downtown Raleigh will help attract the employees Red Hat is trying to snag from other metros. Red Hat has been hiring rapidly since moving its headquarters to downtown Raleigh's Red Hat Tower 2 years ago. Alexander campaigned for the partnership. It's not a hard sell once you start seeing the fruits of their labor, she says. Raleigh coffee startup lands investors, launches expansion plans. High-end coffee startup Slingshot Coffee Company is about to get a $400,000 boost, says its founder, Jenny Bonchak, and it's already closed on a lead investor, John Replogle, the Raleigh-based CEO of Seventh Generation. He gives several reasons. Coffee is hot and on the go in an underserved market, he says, adding that the company's fabulous packaging and his own interest in social entrepreneurship in North Carolina sealed the deal. Replogle and Bonchak met through a friend of a friend of a friend. He saw it, he tried it, he liked it, she says. We just started talking. According to Bonchak, the company has already used the initial investment to move into an expanded brewing and bottling facility on Brookside Drive, just outside of downtown Raleigh. The firm has also expanded distribution of its newest product, Cascara Tea, a bottled tea brewed from dried coffee cherries that was released in August. Additional products are planned for mid-2015, but for now she's tight-lipped on the details. The investment round, the firm's first, is set to close by the end of the year. And in a section marked Startups, American Underground sparks local innovation. Home to 180 companies across three campuses in Durham and Raleigh, the American Underground entrepreneurial co-working space is growing, expected to be at 95,000 square feet by January due to a downtown Durham expansion. American Underground surveyed its companies to provide a snapshot of how they've fared in 2013 to 2014. 323, the number of new jobs created by American Underground companies. $40.56 million, the amount raised by companies affiliated with American Underground. $20.75 million, the amount raised by companies headquartered within the American Underground. $21,904, the number of cups of coffee brewed at American Underground. And $674,700, the amount of money American Underground companies spent at downtown Durham and downtown Raleigh establishments. And finally, in a She Said It section, yes, I realize it's almost the end of the year. And that quote is from Jill Schusmacher, Director of Business Development for Google Fiber, says Raleigh can expect an announcement on whether the service is coming by 2015. But she says that despite being in town for the keynote at the Fiber to the Home conference in downtown Raleigh, she's not announcing anything. And next we have the reporter page for Dawn Wallace, who covers small business, personalities, and triangle trends. The main article, favorable winds ahead. North Carolina developers hope for extension of tax credits beyond 2014. Federal lawmakers are hashing out whether to extend the wind energy tax credits beyond 2014, which could determine the fate of North Carolina's offshore wind opportunities. Currently, there are no offshore wind projects under construction in the state, but developers are watching lawmakers to determine if they should proceed with considerations. A new report released December 4 by Environment North Carolina Research and Policy Center shows that offshore wind energy generation in North Carolina could offset the carbon pollution of five coal plants. Wind energy is a wise investment for the environment and the economy, says Representative David Price. In North Carolina, developing the infrastructure to support wind power could help us meet up to a third of our energy needs, while creating tens of thousands of jobs and an estimated $22 billion in economic benefit, I strongly believe that wind and other renewable sources are critical to our energy future. According to the report, if by 2025 North Carolina could generate 15,000 gigawatts of wind energy, it would be enough to power 1.3 million homes. By 2030, that could increase to 2.7 million homes if wind energy generation continued to grow on that trajectory. Wind power can replace the dirty energy sources of the past and the pollution that comes with them, says Dave Rogers, Field Director for Environment North Carolina, but we need to act now to ensure a clean energy future. The National Renewable Energy Laboratory says North Carolina has the most offshore wind potential of any Atlantic state. Some factors that contribute to its potential include how far it protrudes the eastern seaboard and the ocean floor's topography. Fuel up on natural gas in Sanford. Sanford will receive a $1.5 million natural gas fueling station by the end of the first quarter of 2015. Gain Clean Fuel is establishing 100 natural gas fueling stations across the country by 2017. It just signed off on two for North Carolina. The second one will be in Charlotte. The Sanford station is at the intersection of Highway 42 East and Cox Mill Road. It's going to be a fast-fill compressed natural gas station that is geared specifically toward Class 8 heavy-duty trucking fleets, says Gain Clean Fuel spokesperson Ann Weish. It will look and feel like a typical diesel truck stop, but there won't be a convenience store. Four fueling pumps will have an output capacity of 8 to 15 gallons per minute, depending on how many vehicles are fueling. The station will be open to the public with no attendant. PSNC Energy will supply the natural gas. Helping motorists get charged up. The North Carolina Department of Transportation has agreed to include electric vehicle charging station signs along highways. Electric vehicle charging stations are popping up around the Triangle, but not all of them have signage to help drivers locate them. There are more than 120 charging stations across the Triangle, according to the app PlugShare, but it took some coaxing from the North Carolina Department of Transportation to include signage for the station, says NC Clean Energy Technology Center's Clean Transportation Project Coordinator, Marcy Bauer. We pointed out the growing popularity of EVs in this region, and NCDOT knew it was something they would need to eventually address in order to, as they put it, best serve the motoring public, says Bauer. On U.S. Highway 1, the NCDOT recently edited the sign along the highway for the Green McDonald's in Cary to notify customers that it has a charging station. Bauer says other restaurants and shopping centers are slowly following suit, and that the Umstead Hotel and Spa in Cary is. And now we turn to the Executive Voice column in the Triangle Business Journal, and it features Peter Gwaltney, and he is the new North Carolina Bankers Association CEO. Some information on him. His name is Peter K. Gwaltney, age 51, education BA, Louisiana State University, residence Raleigh, family, wife of 29 years, Ginny, six children, ages 16 to 28. First job, Kalkaisu Marine National Bank, Lake Charles, Louisiana. And the headline on his question and answer, after Katrina, he's ready for anything. New North Carolina Bankers Association CEO shares challenges, opportunities. And this is written by Dawn Wallace. When Thad Woodard retired after 37 years of serving the North Carolina Bankers Association, Peter Gwaltney from the Louisiana Bankers Association will take over as Chief Executive Officer, bringing 17 years of experience that includes the aftermath of Hurricanes Katrina and Rita. Within 30 days, it devastated 30 banks. They were flooded to the rooftops, Gwaltney says. They were out of business for an extended period of time. I learned a lot about the resilience of banks and bankers. Just a year later, the banks were back up and running profitably. We didn't lose a single bank in that experience. He also formed close relationships with regulatory agencies and the White House during that time, adding to a professional experience he says he wouldn't ask for again, but also wouldn't trade. The hurricane was just a speed bump, he says, but we still had to continue operating. Part of that focus meant looking to other associations for innovation, and one of those was the North Carolina Bankers Association. What can your employees expect from your leadership style? I've adapted a very collaborative approach. I avoid rabbit trails. I take a relationship-based approach or a listening approach. I get a great deal of joy seeing members of the staff think and create and succeed, and then give them all the credit they can stand for those achievements. Which bankers' associations in other states served as significant role models? When I was at the Louisiana Bankers Association, I looked to the North Carolina Bankers Association as a model for innovation in member services and industry leadership, which is what makes this new opportunity such an honor. What was the hardest part of getting banks back in order when Hurricanes Katrina and Rita hit Louisiana? Initially, it was the inability to communicate. All cell and landlines were down for an extended period of time. Also, lack of infrastructure and critical services due to flooding and loss of population. What's been the most challenging aspect of your life? Learning to balance work and family. So how do you balance your work while raising six kids? The skills needed to lead an organization are very similar to those needed to lead a large family. What's the biggest challenge ahead for banks in general? The regulatory burden. What is something most people don't know about you? I play drums, and I delivered our fourth child at home. It's a long story. In another life, what career might you have chosen? Pediatrician. What do you most value in a team? Trust. What are you most looking forward to about moving to North Carolina? It's a beautiful place to live, and Raleigh is on top of all the lists of good things to look for in a place to live. Everyone I talk to about our move, they want to come with us. The business climate is attractive, plus it's got the mountains and the beach. We have so much to see. I'll be traveling the state visiting all the banks. What's something you absolutely cannot travel without? My iPhone. And in the Triangle Business Journal, there's a special section called Healthiest Employers that begins with a letter from the editor. A salute to the Triangle's wellness-focused firms. Welcome to Triangle Business Journal's 2014 Healthiest Employers of the Triangle Awards. We are pleased to present you with this special section focusing on employers who have made health a priority among their workforces. These companies understand that in order to have consistent, productive, and happy staff, health needs to be a core priority in their struggles, in their strategies. To date, there have been more than 250 scientific studies performed that show a positive return on workplace wellness investment to companies. Some industry reports have shown that when implemented properly and to the right group, the return on investment is as high as $13 for every dollar spent. Being selected as a winner is no small achievement. Winning companies completed an online assessment with our partner, Healthiest Employers LLC. This non-biased measurement scored wellness programs in comparison to regional and national employers. These winners have embraced wellness and have proactively shaped their company strategies. They have done so through assigning task forces, scheduling activity time, issuing employee benefits, doling out financial incentives, and overall, by building strong wellness programs. Because of strong scores across several relevant parameters by many companies, we decided to recognize 35 local companies in 2014. Thank you to our partners and sponsors, and a special thanks to our gold sponsors, United Healthcare and Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina, and our corporate sponsor, Cigna, without whom none of this would be possible. These leaders are doing all they can to keep healthy and therefore happy and successful workforces. I hope you enjoy our special report and are inspired by the stories of these healthiest employers. And that was written by editor Sugata Mukherjee. And we'll read the winner, the number one healthiest employer, Raleigh-Durham Airport Authority in Morrisville. Local employees, 275. Total employees, 275. Local human resources contact, Cleon Humphrey. Company description, oversees daily operations of the Raleigh-Durham International Airport. What wellness initiatives does your company offer its employees? RDU partners with ILWM Wellness to provide a comprehensive wellness program. Specific elements of the program include health risk assessments, biometric screenings, personal wellness strength builder, seminars, 4 on-site gyms, 9 weekly exercise classes, curbside health wellness and culture coaching, personal training. How do you decide which wellness programs to implement, and why did you conclude they were needed? Our primary objective is to provide a healthy workplace to support a healthy, engaged, and high-performing workforce. As employees and their families make healthy lifestyle choices, they experience an improvement in their quality of life, and as a result, the organization benefits. If you offer more than one wellness initiative or opportunity, which is the most popular? Our free curbside coaching and on-site fitness classes are our most popular offerings. What steps does your company take to encourage employees to participate? The most effective promotional tools are our employees themselves. As staff members witness other staff experiencing real results, they believe that they too can improve their health. Employees and their families are incentivized by a reduction in their monthly health insurance premium to participate in the health risk assessment, the smoking attestation commitment, and a biometric screening. What financial commitment does this require? RDU budgeted approximately $134,000 towards the wellness initiative for this fiscal year, about $500 per full-time employee. We haven't had to increase the wellness budget for 5 years, and we've achieved net medical pharmacy claims cost savings in excess of $1.7 million. Has your program ever been scaled back during budget crunches? If so, what programs did you keep regardless of budgetary constraints? Our program was not scaled back due to budgetary restraints. The wellness program was the top-rated benefit in the organization's employee survey. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the People on the Move section. The spotlight is on Jerry Tranum, CIO of Railink Corporation. In 2005, Jerry Tranum joined Railink Corporation as a project manager. Fast forward to November 2014, he's now been tapped to oversee all aspects of the company's IT function. And considering that Railink is a tech company in the business of providing real-time interline rail data for the North American railroad system, information technology management is paramount. As CIO, Tranum is responsible for providing the vision and leadership for Railink's data, product development, and information systems platforms. He reports directly to company president and CEO Alan West. Cary-based Railink currently employs about 300 people, all of whom are located in the Triangle. What is the one thing you wish people knew about your job? The freight rail industry is in the midst of a renaissance, made possible by significant increases in business growth and complemented by enabling advancements in IT. We're very excited about the coming changes and Railink's role in providing new solutions for improvements in safety and efficiency, as well as entirely new use cases. What are some of your major goals in this position? My goals for this position are to continue growing the business, grow the IT staff base with increased competencies, innovation, and continued improvements in quality processes, and strengthen relationships with our customer base. Biggest pet peeve? When people don't follow through and meet their commitments. Biggest worry? Retaining top talent in the sizzling Raleigh-Cary-Durham area. We're in a great position with innovation, corporate culture, and a high-growth customer base. Triangle Area Business Person You Most Admire. Jim Goodnight, CEO and co-founder of SAS. Personal. Trainum is married and has two children, Matthew and Madison. Last book read, Java SE8 for the Really Impatient by Kay Horstman. And with our remaining minutes, we'll read as much as we can from the viewpoint page, the guest column, the headline, Values of Tiger Moms and Gorilla Dads, written by Kristen Blair, who is a Chapel Hill-based education writer. Cultural catchphrases for parenting styles abound, from the tiger mom to the newly coined gorilla dad. Each purports to capture a distinct set of parenting behaviors. Even the micromanagerial methods of the helicopter parent have garnered a place in our pop culture vernacular. But what kind of parent has the edge when it comes to raising academic achievers? And because of our time constraints, we'll skip ahead in the article. Media catchphrases notwithstanding, there is no holy grail of parental involvement, but this we know, and unequivocally so, an engaged parent is good for kids in schools. Warm, loving parental engagement expressed through active involvement in a child's education isn't unconventional, it isn't gimmicky or extreme, but it is effective. Students with involved parents perform better on virtually every academic metric, from grades to test scores. They exhibit fewer behavioral problems and are likelier to finish high school than kids with uninvolved parents. Yet not all forms of parental involvement are equal. Attending a PTA meeting is not on par with reading to a child. The Harvard Family Research Project, featuring data from William James on school-based... And I'm afraid we will have to stop there, as we have run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. You can contact us at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.